Now, in the setup for this story, we'll use language that some listeners may find inappropriate. President Trump reportedly used a vulgar slur in a meeting on immigration policy Thursday, referring to African nations as well as Haiti as shithole countries. The bipartisan meeting was part of negotiations around the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, also known as DACA. And while the White House did not initially deny the president's remarks, the president stepped back from them in a tweet this morning denying any derogatory language towards Haiti. The language was condemned by United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Rupert Colville. Here's a listen.
These are shocking and shameful comments from the President of the United States. I'm sorry, but there's no other word one can use but racist. You cannot dismiss entire countries and continents as whose entire populations who are not white are therefore not welcome.
Jeremy Sir is with us now. He holds the Mac Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership and Global Affairs, and he's a professor of history and public affairs at the University of Texas, Austin, former history professor at UW-Madison. His latest book is The Impossible Presidency, The Rise and Fall of America's Highest Office. Jeremy, welcome back to the show.
Rob, happy to be on.
Your reaction to the reports of what the president was saying about immigrants from different countries?
It's outrageous. Presidents in the past have used off-color language at times, Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon being the examples that come to mind, but they never used it to denigrate entire societies, and they never did it as a pattern of behavior that now with President Trump goes back more than a year to his anti-Muslim, anti-Mexican, and various other racist comments. And when they did it, Nixon and Johnson in the past, they would then apologize. And the absence of a Trump apology is almost more striking than the comment itself. It doesn't seem to bother him that much of the world thinks he's a racist. So this is outrageous, and this is a low point in the image of the United States in my lifetime.
A lot of the conversation has been around the profanity itself, but some people have been pointing to what appears to be a kind of an attempt to create a racial quota, or at least a nationality-based quota, saying, hey, not Haiti and Africa, where most of the immigrants would be black. How about more countries like Norway, where theoretically most of the immigrants would be white?
Right. Well, I mean, the racial implications, I think, are obvious. And we do have a long history, unfortunately, in our society, Rob, of having quotas in immigration. Most notoriously, the immigration acts of the early 20th century limited Jewish immigrants, limited immigrants from Southern Europe, limited certainly immigrants from outside of Europe. But the 1965 Immigration Act transformed our society, opening our society to people, workers, and others from all parts of the world, students who hadn't been admitted to our society before. This is a huge step backwards. And even the advocates of immigration quotas in the past did not use quite the same racist language, at least not after World War II, as we've seen from this president.
Now, the president has made the case, and his defenders after this incident are saying, you know, what we're really saying is we don't want lower-skilled people coming from countries. We want to focus on admitting higher-skilled, more educated immigrants who will benefit the economy. What do you think of that idea?
Anyone who tries to defend it with that ridiculous argument is lying. This was not a comment about the quality of workers from one country or another. This was a blanket denigration of societies that have produced some of the best students who have been in my classroom, some of the hardest working individuals within our society, computer programmers, doctors, nurses, people who take care of us in hospitals. One could make an argument about the kinds of skills we want to see in people coming into our society, but that has nothing to do with the statement that was made by the president, which was pure racism, and anyone who defends it is defending racism.
What do you make of the reaction you've seen from Republicans? Here in Wisconsin, House Speaker Paul Ryan called the comments unfortunate and unhelpful, and then talked about his own Irish roots. Republican Senator Ron Johnson said the president should apologize for the remark. What are you making of the response, especially from Republican leadership?
Well, you know, Rob, I'm glad that they aren't defending it, but I'm also very tired of people who know better saying the comments are unfortunate and then continuing to support, work with, pass legislation like a ridiculous tax bill for individuals who express these kinds of racist comments. There's really only one way to judge people. Who do you choose to associate yourself with? If you associate yourself with racists, even if you say the comments of the racists are unfortunate, you're defending racism, and we need to call out what it is. They have to stop calling it unfortunate. They have to start moving away, opposing the man who makes these statements.
Talking to a historian and public affairs professor, Jeremy Suri from the University of Texas Austin, about the president's remarks on immigrants and the nature of countries like Haiti and parts of Africa. Let's talk about the foreign policy implications here, Jeremy. We've seen people calling American ambassadors to the carpet in Haiti, Botswana, I think elsewhere. What does this do to American foreign policy in the Caribbean and in Africa?
Well, a very specific thing it does is it hinders our ability to fight terrorism. One of the priorities that we have had consistently since at least 2001 has been to keep our citizens and our society safe from those, and there are very few of them, but there are people out there who want to do us harm. Within each of the societies that the president used this derogatory term for, within each of the societies that the president has attacked with racist language for the last year, there are hundreds and thousands of intelligence agents and military officers from those societies who every day provide us information that help us to find and prosecute people who are trying to harm our society. I'm told by people in the intelligence world that that has stopped. Already, many of these local officials were not willing to work with Americans. Now they're even less willing than before. This makes every American less safe. Citizens of Wisconsin and Texas and New York are now less safe when they travel to the Middle East or Africa because of the president's comments.
A Republican strategist tweeted that he'd gotten in touch with a contact in Africa, and the contact said something back like, "Oh, I don't have time now. I'm going to take a class in Mandarin." And that points toward U.S. competition with China, China making big efforts to tap into markets in Africa and resource supplies in Africa. Does this hurt us potentially in economic relations with Africa?
Absolutely. We're watching this happen very explicitly throughout Asia right now, but in Africa as well, as we no longer have the prestige we had to convince countries that we're a better partner. The Chinese are often providing more money for aid projects, for road development projects, for things of that, with fewer strings attached, with less regulation, and they offer more to countries, and countries that wanted to work with us before because they thought we were a defender of human rights and perhaps a better partner, now no longer stands that way. The Chinese are offering more money, and the Chinese look better than we do in many respects.
And we saw earlier today, unrelated to this incident, news came out that the U.S. ambassador to Panama had resigned, reportedly because he felt he couldn't represent the Trump administration anymore. This he had filed for this before these new comments. It was not related to those. But what do you make of morale in the U.S. diplomatic community right now?
So Rob, I just ran a workshop with a number of other scholars this last weekend with diplomats from around the world, including American diplomats. It's a workshop we run every year, and I've never seen such low morale among American diplomats. I also tell you that I train students at the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs, many of whom want to go into the Foreign Service. This is the first year I don't have large numbers of those students who want to take the Foreign Service exam. Our Foreign Service officials, who are hard-working diplomats, many appointed by Republicans as well as Democrats, they have incredibly low morale. And the talented, most talented young people in our society, many of whom would have gone into the Foreign Service before, people like young Condoleezza Rices and Jim Bankers and others, they're not interested in the Foreign Service anymore. This is a real problem for us.
What does this all do long-term for the United States' place on the global stage?
Well, this is where I think historical perspective is really important. One of the big advantages the United States has had since at least 1945 is that while many countries have had reasons to disagree and in many cases violently oppose us, they generally felt we were a better partner or at least a better country to work with than the alternatives, the Soviet Union or China. And we're losing that advantage. We're losing our brand. We're losing what some scholars call our soft power. And that is going to make every transaction, every relationship more expensive for us. At the university level now, we have to work harder to recruit the best foreign students to come to the U.S. Many of them now want to go to Germany or Canada or somewhere else instead, where they're not going to be hassled by immigration. For businesses, I'm told, it's much harder now to recruit talent to come to the United States. We just talked about how talent is not moving into our government offices. So everything is going to be harder for us. Everything is going to be more costly because we will not have that historical advantage we have had of being seen as at least a little bit better than all of our peers around the world.
Do you see Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, having an opportunity to provide some kind of remedy to what you're talking about?
that was a hope. I was one of many who believed, based on historical experience, that individuals coming into the State Department at the level of Secretary of State who have international experience and international prestige are able to do important work for the agency. But Tillerson has not been able to do that, and I don't have a clear reason why. I've talked to many people within the State Department, and they have different explanations. One is that they don't have support from the President of the United States, but one is perhaps that Tillerson himself doesn't believe in America's international mission. I think we have a group of leaders right now in Washington who don't understand the history of what made our society as influential and wealthy as it is, and it wasn't low taxes. It was our international presence. It was our ability to work and build relationships with other societies. It was our ability to recruit talent here. They don't understand that, and they're taking our country in the wrong direction. Most Americans understand what makes our country a great country, but our leaders don't. And so we're going in an unpopular, self-destructive direction. And the comments by the president are a further indication of the way in which our leaders in Washington are so far out of touch. Imagine any CEO making those comments. Imagine your boss making those comments, Rob. First, be fired.
We'll leave it there for now. Jeremy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
I'm delighted to talk about these issues, and I look forward to continuing the conversation.
That's Jeremy Suri, professor of history and public affairs at the University of Texas, Austin, and author of The Impossible Presidency, The Rise and Fall of America's Highest Office. He joined us to talk about the president's remarks on nations in Africa, as well as Haiti, that have been generating controversy through the day today.